This is Fresh Air. When Betty Rollin wrote about her struggle with breast cancer nearly 20 years ago, her book became a bestseller. Little had been written on the subject, especially by someone who had gone through the experience. Her book was entitled First You Cry, and its success turned Rollin into a role model for other women faced with a disease and hungry for advice on how to cope. Her book was made into a TV movie starring Mary Tyler Moore. Rollin was a TV news reporter when she first got breast cancer. She's currently a contributing correspondent for NBC News. Rollin wrote about another personal matter 10 years later when she helped her mother, who had ovarian cancer, commit suicide. That book was called Last Wish and described her mother's determination to die and Rollin's efforts to help her. First You Cry has just been reissued in paperback because a lot has changed in the understanding and treatment of breast cancer. A lot has also changed for Rollin. She had breast cancer again in 1984. Even though her health is good, Rollin says every day she lives with some fear.
Frankly, not to be too Pollyanna about it, but that little bit of fear that one has, it can be a good thing in life. I mean, I think that it, all of those corny things, that little bit of fear makes you, focuses you, makes you a lot more grateful for being around. I found it useful.
How would you say that you have changed since you had breast cancer? How are you a different person?
Well, it's interesting. They've republished this book, First You Cry, and since they republished it, I thought I would reread it after 17 years. So I reread it, and as I reread it, I thought, what is this lady making such a fuss about? And that in itself, that reaction to the book, made me realize how far I've come, how different life is for me today than the way what it was when I was first hit with this thing. And it also, by the way, made me glad that I didn't revise the book. I mean, there's a new introduction and a new epilogue, but I didn't change the actual story, because it's a story of what happens when this thing hits you, breast cancer, and what you feel and what you go through and how you come out of it, and about sexuality and all of that stuff. And today, all of that, just, I feel so far from all of that. Even though I had it again 9 years ago. I mean, I feel personally grateful, happy. I'm in this terrific second marriage that happened post-cancer. I like to say cancer improved my taste in men, though I'm not recommending it as a way to do that, but it had that odd result, because I think what happened is that, I, like a lot of women, I kind of gravitated towards slightly punishing men, and when breast cancer hit, that itself was such a punishment that it sort of made me more interested in, or feel more interested in nicer men. That's my private theory about that. Although I've heard similar stories from other women. You know, when you write a book about yourself and about something like this that's happened to you, you hear, it's almost like a letter. I mean, you hear back from people. They write you back and they say, me too, you know, yes, I went through that. And I've heard over the years a lot of nice things about men and about relationships.
What is your feeling about implants? You had implants put in, right?
I have saline implants, which I find very satisfactory. And of course, if saline leaks, it's only water, so it can't hurt you. Now, I would advise any woman getting implants to get saline for that reason. I mean, silicone, there have been problems with silicone.
Yes.
It's debatable whether these awful diseases that some women have had have been caused by silicone leakage, but frankly, you know, why take the chance?
Mm. Did you have any hesitations about getting implants?
I took a long time to do it. I didn't have them right away. I waited. And in a way, it's good that I waited, because by the time I had the implants, I had two breasts to replace instead of one. So if I had had the one, then I would have had to match it. That would have been harder. So this way, I started out with a clean slate, so to speak. It also, writing about the whole prosthesis hunt in First You Cry gave me a very funny scene, which I wouldn't otherwise have had.
Well, do implants take some getting used to?
No, they're really kind of like new little breasts. I mean, they're not exactly, obviously, like new little breasts, but they're terrific. They stay up. You don't have to wear a bra. They're wonderful. I mean, my friends are jealous. What can I tell you?
Reporter Betty Rollins' book about her breast cancer, First You Cry, has just been reissued. More with Betty Rollins after this short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Betty Rollins, and we're talking about a book she wrote a number of years ago called First You Cry, and it's her story about overcoming breast cancer. Do you think just because the statistics are improved and that breast cancer is no longer a taboo word, it's easier to talk about it, that it's actually easier for a woman to cope with a diagnosis?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it's a terrible shock to find out you have breast cancer. Terrible. Possibly it's slightly less terrible now than it was when I first got it in 1975, because you certainly know you have company, and I hope you know that you have a good chance of living. But it's still a terrible shock. One of the reasons is that breast cancer doesn't hurt. You're not sick first, so when it happens to you, it's very sudden, mostly very out of the blue. And it really just turns you upside down. And it's funny, I reread First You Cry recently, and I was shocked to see how upside down I was. when I wrote this book. I mean, I felt so distant from it, but I realized that upside down feeling and the getting right side up is a process that women are going through still, even though they know they have company, even though they are better educated. I think emotionally it really topples you.
How, though, do you suggest to women, and I assume you probably get letters and phone calls from women all the time you've become such a spokeswoman on this issue, what advice do you have for them to get used to what's happened to their body, to get to know their body in a different kind of way? How do you broach this issue with somebody else?
Well, in a sense, each person has to go through her own process, and it takes time. And if you're feeling down in the dumps and miserable, sometimes I say to people, well, let yourself grieve. You know, it's a kind of death in the body. And sometimes you need to grieve. And it's a mistake I've found over the years to say, oh, it's fine, it's nothing, cheer up, you know, it'll be great, it's nothing. I mean, people have to take their own time. I do say, you know, in time you will feel, just know that in time you will feel differently about this. You will feel differently. Let yourself grieve, but this will pass. And just keep that thought that this will pass. Think about the other things in your life that have happened to you that have just toppled you and struck you down that you got over. You will get over this too. You will change your feelings.
Have you found that your advice has changed over the years as time has gone on and you've changed and your life has changed as well? That you have a kind of perspective on it that you didn't have 10, 5, 15 years ago?
Well, I mean, as you get old, you get, one likes to think, a little bit wiser. I think I feel, in a strange way, grateful to cancer. And I certainly didn't feel that at first. And I feel grateful, certainly because I've lived. But I feel grateful because I think that's the biggest change. Because as I look behind me and as I look at what's happened to me since I've had cancer, I see so many good things. And I see that my life has been so rich, and I see that I've appreciated so much more than I did before, and that I'm more focused and all of that. So that's the change for me, in not only being happier, but noticing it. Noticing it is a big part of it. You know, a lot of people, there's no point in being happy unless you notice it.
Right. What kind of letters and phone calls do you get? And you said you get lots of those. And these
are just people. I get the most wonderful letters and phone. Well, the phone calls are usually not so. I mean, the phone calls are usually women who are in a panic and terror in the voice, and those are not so wonderful. But I like, you know, I can't say I enjoy those calls, but I try to be helpful, and it's a nice feeling to think you might be helpful. But the letters are just great. The letters are usually from women who will say, you know, as I was reading what you were feeling in First You Cry, I felt, oh, I was there too. That's just so much what I was feeling, and I thought I was totally crazy, and my mother is just like your mother. My husband is just like your husband. And then they tell me their breast cancer jokes. I mean, there's a lot of humor in First You Cry, and I'll get this wonderful letter. I got one just recently. My dog ate my prosthesis. And, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's wonderful. It's warm. It's a kind of closeness to people you don't know. That is a real joy of writing about yourself in an intimate way.
You assisted in your mother's suicide. She had cancer. She had ovarian cancer.
Yes.
If you hadn't had cancer yourself, would you have been more reluctant to help her?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, the fact that I had cancer myself perhaps made me more sensitive to her situation. But my mother begged me to help her to die. It was her wish. It really had nothing to do with me or what I wanted or what I thought. That book was called Last Wish, and the word wish was very important because it was her wish. It was what she wanted. It was her begging me to do this. It really had nothing to do with me or my wish it was horrible for me to lose her, but this was what she wanted, and there was no doubt in my mind that it was what she wanted. So I think it would have been the same, frankly, if I had, whether or not I had cancer, I don't think really would have affected it. I love my mother, and it seemed to me her wish, it was a reasonable wish given her situation. She was terminally ill, suffering at the end anyway. She just wanted to be spared the last horrible few months, and I thought that seemed reasonable to me.
Going through your mother's death and having to deal with breast cancer yourself, do you think about how you want to die and what you're willing and not willing to do? It's a subject that none of us really wants to think about or even talk about.
Much more I think about how I want to live.
Yeah.
But of course I think about how I want to die and here's what I think about that. I mean, I would like, as everyone, to die in my sleep at the age of 98 or so.
Sure.
But I would like to know. I've become very active in this movement, I suppose you'd call it, to legalize physician-assisted suicide, because if I have so much mail from people, some have AIDS, some are elderly people, some are people who are not sick but they're just frightened, people who get to the end of life, they're desperate, they want out, they're suffering, they are terminally ill, and they need help. And I just feel that we must not turn our backs on these people, and we need to legalize physician-assisted suicide with safeguards in place, very important. But there's a way to do this, and anyone who read my mail would feel the same way. I mean, this is a population you don't know about, you don't hear about, they're hidden, you know, they're lying there, some of them unable to do anything but blink their eyelids, and they need help. You know what it is? The most important thing about this, I think, is that it's the feeling of security, of insurance, of calm. When my mother knew that she had a way out, a calm came over her, just to know that she wasn't trapped, you know, whether or not she took the step.
You mentioned that you live with a small dose of fear. I mean, having had breast cancer twice, I guess you can't ever entirely get away from that feeling. Are there days when you feel just much more mortal than others?
Yes, there are. And very often those are days when someone dies. Mm-hmm. And I hear from a lot of people, most of them live, but some of them die. And when someone dies, I feel, why them? Why that person? Why not me? And there's no answer to that. I mean, some people think there is, you know, they think because they've prayed or something, but, you know, who lives and who dies and who gets a cancer that spreads and who gets one that's, I mean, all of this stuff is just so, there's no logic, there's no rhyme or reason, it's just luck and genes and who knows. And so all of that chanciness of it all makes one feel mortal, yes.
Well, I thank you very much, Betty Rowland, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
I thank you.
Betty Rowland's book on her battle with breast cancer, First You Cry, has been reissued in paperback. This is Fresh Air.